So it's always a pleasure to have Dave Day with us. Some of you know Dave really well because you share history with our community corporately as a church and also as a friend of many people here. Dave is someone who's led churches, who has worked in the voluntary sector, who has established charities, and you've pastored people. You are a dad, you're a granddad, you're a friend, you're a husband, you're many things, aren't you? And is someone who we really value and really enjoy when you come and speak here in Lyndon. So let me pray for you. Father, I just really thank you for Dave, for what you have been to him and what he is to us and many others. So as we stand on that bedrock of love here in this building, we feel our feet on this ground, that you would breathe your life through what Dave shares with us today, and that it's your wisdom that shines through, and that it engages with each of us in the way that you are wanting to whisper to our soul. That it isn't just head knowledge, but it is something, a pearl, a treasure that we can take away and that will make a difference into the week ahead and life going forward. So Father, be with us, be with Dave. Amen.
Thank you. After that introduction, I can't wait to hear myself speak. The kids have gone upstairs to have fun, but you lot. Thank you for the invitation to come and speak. It's always a great thrill to come here. I use you might not know this, as a role model to some churches that I'm working with because of the impact that I've seen you make in so many areas. In fact, just 10 days ago, I got back from Zambia, and many people send their greetings. I was doing a leader seminar, and they did advise me not to wear shorts. So I said, I am not Chris. But they send their greetings, and there's a team out there at the moment. Now, when I speak, please feel very free to chip in, to interrupt, to ask a question, to disagree, because I, like all of us, am still on a journey. And there's so many things that I was adamantly certain about years ago that I haven't got a clue now. And it seems the older I get, the less I know. And so I'm on a journey. And so my sharing is just me inviting you to join me on my journey. And so if you do want to ask a question, if I've made myself clear, please don't hesitate to interrupt. I wouldn't be in the slightest bit fazed or worried. I would welcome it, because I think we get so used to listening to talks and we don't get into the mentality of saying, hang on a minute, what do you mean by that? Proverbs 25, 28 says, we've heard, like a city whose walls are broken down is the person who has no control over their spirit. Paul says in Galatians 5, he says, I'm in conflict, because there's part of me where I see the fruits of the spirit develop, and there's parts of me where the fruits of the flesh, you know, the selfishness develops, and it seems that I'm in constant battle. And Paul says the same things in Romans 7. He said, I feel in this turmoil. There's good things that I want to do. There's bad things that I don't want to do, but I find myself doing the bad things. And he said, I just feel wretched at times because I'm in this tug of war. And sometimes we're like that. And here the writer just says, look, if we can't control our spirit, and I'm not going to be clinical on what is body, what is soul and spirit. If we can't control the real us, we're vulnerable. Like a city whose walls are broken down. And if you look in scripture, the walls of a city are important. Jericho could only be possessed when the walls broke down. when Nehemiah, if you're familiar with that story in the Old Testament, when he heard that Jerusalem was devastated, the problem was the city walls were broken. So his job was to restore the walls. And it says in Nehemiah 6 that when he completed it, there wasn't a gap between it. So the walls were complete without a vulnerable part. And if you're like me, which I'm sure you are, we have got our vulnerabilities. We've got our weaknesses. We've got those areas that the enemy would delight in attacking if he can. And so what I want to do is highlight some of them. And I realize for each person, your vulnerable areas might be very different from mine, but I think there's some general ones. And then just to give some very simple, very, very simple things, how can we help with this? How can we take a step forward? What's a simple thing? So it's not going to be theological, it's just going to be very practical. We're a mixture. Why? Because we've got so many external pressures. There are some pressures that we, internal responses to external things. Now, if you're like me and you've got an evangelical tradition, but certainly in this day and age, and certainly in America, I would distance myself from what is perceived as evangelical. You were brought up, and you may have heard as I did, it says in the Bible 365 times, fear not, therefore don't fear. Did any of you hear things like that? Or don't be anxious, cast your anxiety on the Lord because he cares for you. And we heard that, and yet nobody ever told me how to do it. And what my sympathy is with so many people I know within the church who really struggle, say, with depression and anxiety, but then feel guilty because as Christians, we shouldn't. And so on top of the depression and the anxiety, they've got guilt. And sometimes we can be very insensitive, or it means that we hide what we're really feeling. I can't let people know this because they might think I'm a bad Christian. So it's partly how we're wired up. I'm not a particularly anxious person. My philosophy is, it's not the end of the world. And if it was the end of the world, it wouldn't matter even less. So I'm not a good counsellor. I started the Get a Life School of Counselling, but it wasn't effective. So I'm not prone to being totally anxious, but I know many, many people who are. And sometimes being a non-anxious person, it really drives them mad. A friend of mine who's a psychotherapist, he says this. He says, anxiety is when you overestimate the threat and underestimate your ability to deal with that threat. And I find that helpful because I'm sure in this room there'll be some, and your battle is that anxiety. Now, I might have battles that you don't have, but if that's your thing, sometimes sermons don't help. Sometimes the praise and worship, it temporarily helps, but you wake up in the morning anxious about the day. And I found his definition helpful. It's when you over-emphasize or over-exaggerate the threat, but under-emphasize your ability to deal with that. People are anxious. That's one area where I think our city walls can be broken down. I'll give just one or two points how we can hopefully take some steps forward. And the trouble is I can preach about anxiety and depression and all that, and it might not deal with it this morning. But hopefully it will help you on a journey to start to walk free from it. Because some of you, if those are areas you've struggled with, you've tried everything. And it is a journey. And there might be something in who you are that is wired up to that. So I'm not giving you all the answers, but I'm saying if I can say anything that will help you take a step forward. Because it might be where you've got no control over the over your spirit is baggage you have absorbed. We've all absorbed baggage, some more acutely than others. I know for me, my parents separated, which at that stage was rare. I mean, today it is very common, but I know when I was at school, I think I was the only kid in the class who didn't live with both parents, you know. So that gave me some baggage. And it meant that I could never embrace God as Father because I didn't have a relationship with my Father. And when, as a keen young Christian, as a teenager, they said, honour your father and mother. Well, that sent me screwing. How can you honour someone who's been dishonourable? And so that was a process that I had to work through and probably at times can still go back to a default position of uncertainty. Or I'm fortunate now, I'm at the generation where I don't have many father figures around, they've all pegged it. but when I was growing up, there was always a bit of a barrier to actually relating to father figures. And it's something God had to deal with me. So that was my baggage. Did you hear about the kid who said to his granddad, "Granddad, can you make a noise like a frog?" And the granddad said, "Why?" He said, "Can you make a noise like a frog?" He said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, Mum said, when you croak it, we can go to Disneyland." But for me, there was a sense of, I can't relate to a father figure, which I think would have been a great help to me because that's what I needed, because I'd got my baggage. And it might be your baggage is rejection, which mine was, and God dealt with me over a spirit of rejection. It might be grief. You know, as we get older, we have to face bereavement, and how we process grief is different for each one of us. It might be abuse. And increasingly in these days, we see so much abuse of all sorts, not just the sexual, but the neglect, the physical, the emotional, you know, the four classic areas. But we're dealing with an abused society. Now, that baggage and how it works out in you and me can affect whether I've got control of my spirit or not. It might be some of the baggage we carry is because of choices that we've made. And so addiction, habits, wrong attitudes. It could be that we've got baggage that have been of our choice, lifestyle choices, or things that we did when we were younger that we regret now, but it's still left a vulnerability there. So I think for each one of us, it will be different. And because I have had to battle in this area, yours might be very different. But just think, are there any areas in our lives, in my life, where the walls are vulnerable? You know, often I've chatted to people and I've been amazed at how offended they get. And it's not that I've been offensive, it's just they've grown up in a situation where her is there. And so it stops them having control over their spirit. So as I said, for each one of us, it might be very different. But I want to deal with the vulnerable areas. And just a few thoughts on how we can process it. But as I said, do ask me, do question me, or if there's anybody and you know God has dealt with you in an area that you were vulnerable, that you want to say, it would be great to hear it. Because when we hear what God has done in someone else, it does build faith up in our lives, doesn't it? It makes us think, gosh, if he can do it for him, he can do it to me. My simple rule of thumb is what you feed grows. You've got two plants in your house. You water one, look after one. Don't look after the other. One grows, one dies. And I think that's true in some of these mixture areas. Now, for some people, if anxiety is your thing, Google is your greatest enemy, but it's your default position. Now, I know in the church here, there's quite a few doctors. I'm not sure what the group name for doctors, a waiting room of doctors, a theatre of doctors, but you've got doctors. So I'll be careful what I say. I've got two chronic conditions. I lived till I was 70 without knowing God got them, so yeah, that's all right. But if I Google one of them, it tells me life expectancy is 2.5 years after diagnosis. Well, that was 3 years ago I was diagnosed, so I'm still here. I have to text three, you know, on the journey home, I'm still alive. But, you know, some people, their default position is Google. And it's not always helpful because it feeds the anxiety. I know for some, they've Googled something and it's given them insight and they've found real help. But if, and this is an example, if Google increases your anxiety, don't Google. Because you're feeding the problem. We try to be neighbours from heaven, but we have got two neighbours who are from the other place. And they've caused consternation to the whole sort of community. And, you know, we tried the neighbourly thing, we took the flowers, we took the wine, we tried to meet and talk, but we haven't really made any progress. We've had to take legal advice. So I'm in this situation, which is a bit of a pain. But what I find myself doing, and I nearly started on the journey over, I had these conversations when I'm driving. This is what I would say to them. And I had these imaginary, stupid conversations. But what it's really doing is it's feeding the negative. How can I feed the positive? I love the verse in Philippians 4, Philippians 4, verse 8. Paul says, now, my dear brothers and sisters, fix your thoughts on what is true, honourable, right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise and keep putting them into practice. And he just says, think about things that are good. What he's saying is we are a mixture. We're all liable to things that would distract, that would hurt, that would offend, that would stop us moving forward. But he said, you look for what is good in it. And I've tried to do that. The trouble is when you're speaking, you can give the impression, you know, I live like this and I'm like you. You know, we always have our struggles, don't we? But what I want to do is say, you know, in a situation where there's this battle, which this mixture is coming to the fore, and I could easily lose control of my spirit. What I choose to do, what I try to choose to do, is to say, is there anything good? Is there anything admirable? The trouble is, I've been here so many times, you've probably heard most of my stories. I had the most releasing thing ever said to a preacher to me about 12 months ago. A friend of mine asked me if I'd go and speak at his church on parables. And I said, Steve, I'd be very happy to do that. But remember last year, I did a weekend away with your church on parables. They will have heard everything I've got to say. And he said, Dave, they won't remember that. So that is the most releasing thing to me as a preacher. Because even if you've heard it before, you'll have forgotten it. We were doing some marriage counselling. It was in the days when church leaders did most of the counselling, and then they got wise and thought it'd be easier to send them off to counsellors. But we were counselling this couple, and it was not going well. And the wife was clear, it was the husband's fault. He wasn't spiritual enough. He didn't lead the family in prayers and devotions and all that. And he suddenly said to her, if you're so spiritual, why are you such hell to live with? And, you know, you wish beam me up, Scotty, was a valid prayer. So it was getting sticky. So we just said, right, let's take a step back. We asked the woman, can you think of one good thing? Because we'd heard nothing good about it. Can you think of one good thing about your husband? And she said, yeah, he's great with the kids and he's great first thing in the morning. So we said, just let's stop and thank God for that. And we said to him, it took him longer. But but what we had to do was to shift what we were feeding. So we got good things about each other and we started off and said, right, let's thank God for those things. They're still many, many years later, happy and together. I fear that they wouldn't have been if they would have continued to feed the negative. So whatever your mixture is, what you feed grows. And sometimes we have to consciously choose whatever is good, whatever is holy, think on these things. And if anxiety is your particular struggle, again, something that I've tried to learn is, and Jesus said, live a day at a time, sufficient unto that day is the evil thereof. Just live a day at a time. It's interesting, in many of these recovery groups, the essence is to live a day at a time. And sometimes if we're being pulled down by some big issues, don't think, oh, is it going to be like this forever? Think today. Today, what can I do? Today, how can I get through the day? And to be honest, my most frequent prayer is, God, give me grace for today. And if you wake up in the morning and you're struggling, you're feeling a bit depressed, you're feeling... and sometimes as you get older, physically, it's a bit more of an effort, or you've got chronic conditions, you know, all of those things can happen. Sometimes our morning prayer needs to be, God, give me grace for today. Now, as I said, this isn't great theology, but for me, as I try to keep control over my spirit, that is a helpful prayer. And what I try to do when I get into bed is look back on the day and thank God for things. Now, probably you all do this, but maybe it's just me. But for me, it's positive choices. Something else that I've found as well is if we've got vulnerable areas, you know, the city walls are in danger of breaking down, I have got to find people with whom I can be vulnerable so that they can help me in my vulnerable areas, which sounds a contradiction, but if I've got a real issue with anxiety, for example, or depression, or pornography, you know, the list is wide. The more I keep it to myself, the bigger the issue grows, because I'm feeding the wrong thing. And I need to find people who know me and love me, and I know in here there's a wealth of love and grace and experience, who I can go to and say, can you help me process this? Hebrews says that Jesus suffered in everything like we do so that he can help us. And Paul says, look, there's nothing, there's no temptation that is uniquely for you. It's common to all of us. And if there's a real area that you know is causing your city walls to be broken, please find somebody who won't judge you, because most of us have faced similar issues. You know, if someone comes to me with an issue, I'm not going to be too shocked, probably because it's an issue that I've had to deal with, or, you know, we've all had our issues. But someone who I know will love me and accept me and help me walk through it. Because this is a journey. An area where you've had a problem might not be instantly solved. Sometimes it is, and sometimes God breaks in supernaturally. You know, some Psalm says that God pulled me out of the miry clay. But sometimes God says, when you go through the waters, I'll be with you. So if God does pluck you out and completely turn things around, brilliant. But if he doesn't, he says, I'll walk with you through it. And what God does is he puts men and women alongside us who can walk through it with you. If you've got heartache over children, if you've got heartache over just fear of the future, there will be others here who understand. And what I've tried to learn is, how can I find the people with whom I can be vulnerable to help me through my vulnerable areas? That makes sense. It almost sounds a contradiction, but God doesn't want you to process these things alone. What I found as well, and again, this is a bit of a mantra, my rule of thumb, if we are facing issues that we know are making our city walls crumble, we have a choice. I can choose to do something about it, to step free from it, or just get absorbed in it. And sometimes if there's an issue, like it could be pornography, it could be addiction to phone or games or something, we almost get into a bubble, you know, and it's very hard to break out of the bubble. My rule of thumb is, can we choose to break free? And if even making a choice, that thing is still consuming us, then we probably need prayer. Because there's a hole, the enemy has found the weakness. And if it's rejection, it might be that because of your history, understandably, you've been hurt and rejected. And you'll need those who love you and accept you to pray that God's love, you know, we were talking earlier about God couldn't love us anymore. We need people to minister that to us. But we've got to be honest and vulnerable about it. What we don't share consumes. Hebrews says, make sure that there's no root of bitterness in you, because if it does, it will defile you and others. What are the things within me that if I don't deal with can cause real hurt and offense and affect everyone else? So can I choose to step free from this? And if I can't, what is the context of prayer that will help me? But the final point that I'll make is, in with our choices, it does demand discipline until discipline becomes a habit. Now, it would be good if I could pray every night, God, make me a patient person, and in my sleep, God would wave this magic wand and I'd wake up patient. But it's not like that, is it? God puts you in front from the neighbours from the other place. But then I constantly have to choose. And sometimes I have to discipline my choices until they become habitual. I think they say, if you make a choice 14 times, it becomes a habit, or different things. Some say seven. But you know, it's making those choices until it's the habitual response. So I would urge you to make the choice to see what is good and honourable and think on those things. Do it. Choose to do it each day until it becomes a habit. Choose to accept the fact that what you're getting sucked into is displeasing to God. It's not God's best for you. And choose to follow Jesus. I was just in Zambia, as I said, and many of you will have been there, but their theme this year is the Great Commission. And I love Zambia. I've been going there for 40 years. It's been a major part of my life. But they're very strong on the sin side. And my approach, trying to diplomatically give the other side of the coin, is we are made in God's image. And something in me at birth reflects that image of God. And yes, I know sin separates us from God. I know the whole theology bit. But what I want to do is to see the image of God restored in people. And I think certainly in our Western culture, that is a bigger attraction than just telling people they've got a problem, identifying the problem and say, here's the answer. This sounds cynical, which I am, but that's what cold callers on the telephone do. They tell you you've got a problem and we can help you. And there's a special offer today. And though I understand and accept all that, what I want to do is to see the image of God restored in people. And if my city walls are being broken down, what is being eroded is the image of God in me, the image of God in you. And I want to do what I can to see God's image restored in me and you. It is there, but there will be a day, John says in his letters, when we're going to see him and we're going to be like him. So if I can choose today to try to prevent my city walls being eroded, then I'll see him and I'll be like him. But each choice I make makes me a bit more like him. That makes sense? Any questions, comments, observations, or stories of how God has helped you process things? Good. Yeah, we can both be wrong together.